Hello, and welcome to Under New Management, the podcast that examines new and notable management research and how this research can enhance your effectiveness as a manager in your organization. I'm Morel Hernandez, an assistant professor of management and organization at the Foster School of Business, the University of Washington in Seattle. In this episode, we talk to Scott DeRue of the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. We discuss a paper he recently published in the Academy of Management Journal about team downsizing. Scott, welcome to Under New Management.
Thank you very much, Marilla.
Well, we're very interested in your recent article on team downsizing. How did you become interested in doing research on that?
Well, it's really a perfect storm of several things coming together at the right time. A couple of years prior to conducting this study, I was working at a large consulting firm as a project manager, and we had to lay off a large number of our professional staff. One day I had, let's say, 8 people on my team. The following day I had 2 or 3.
Wow.
And so the team was considerably downsized, yet we still had a client contract in hand that required certain deliverables in a specified time frame and so forth. And so despite the loss of over half of our team, we still had to adapt to the situation, still deliver to the client the results that we had promised. And so I got interested in downsizing at a team level from that experience. And then the second piece of that storm was that my research team was working under a grant from the Office of Naval Research. And in that grant, we were planning to do research on team size. And in reviewing the literature on team size, it became clear to us that most of that literature focused on static representations of team size, if you will. So, for example, most of the research was on how many team members is optimal for team functioning. So how large or small should teams be?
Okay.
But there was really no literature on how changes in team size impacted team functioning over time. And then the third piece was really a limitation in the existing research on downsizing. Most of that research had grown up focusing on downsizing at the organizational level, looking at how downsizing impacts organizational processes, organizational performance, but nothing on how downsizing events impacted the small work groups or the teams that were inside the organization.
Well, you mentioned that there has been work done at the organizational level. What has that research said about the effect of team downsizing to the organization and its members?
The existing research on downsizing really hasn't considered the impact at the team level of what's going on when teams are downsized. There are several things we can take away from that literature that speak to the impact of downsizing on organizations. One is related to how survivors of the downsizing react post-downsizing. So Joel Brockner at Columbia and others have done fascinating work on looking at the justice perceptions of survivors, so how fairly they feel they've been treated. And that research ultimately shows that survivors are negatively affected even though they're the ones that get to stay in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was reading last week's Business Week mentioned a recent study showing that survivors are more likely to leave a company after a downsizing event than if there had been no downsizing at all. And so survivors simply have a hard time processing and dealing with the downsizing, which is ultimately one possible explanation for why downsizing actually hurts organizational performance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one takeaway we can glean from the existing literature. Another potential reason why downsizing has been shown to maybe negatively affect organizational effectiveness or performance is that most organizations and teams simply say, in the context of a downsizing, look, we just have to get our jobs done. We just have to get it all done, yet with less resources after the layoff and so forth. I know this is, in my own personal experience, this was our reaction. We had a downsizing, we lost half our team, yet we still had to get this client contract done. We just tried to do more and step
more
up to
the
plate and exactly put more effort into the project. But clearly maintaining or improving organizational performance with less resources at hand is not a long-term viable solution. And the teams within those organizations are not all going to be able to do that. And complicating the matter even more is that most simply say, look, we just have to work harder. We don't often think, well, you know, we may actually need to meaningfully adapt or change the way that work gets done. and we substitute effort for actually adaptation.
Well, let's talk about your study a little bit more, because the adaptation perspective that you take is very interesting and extremely relevant to team functioning. So you talk about three different types of structural approaches to downsizing.
Sure.
Can you explain what they are and perhaps how they affect the ability of the team to adapt?
The first approach that we examined in the study was what we called maintaining hierarchy. And this approach to team downsizing essentially maintains the status quo in terms of leadership structure and whatnot, while downsizing one of the more junior members of the team. And at least research at the organization level would suggest this is the most common approach in organizational settings. This approach, it maintains the traditional leadership hierarchy in the team. There's really no change in the hierarchy, where the team leader continues performing his or her role as is, and likewise for the team members, just that the team members are now responsible for more work, the work that the displaced team member was doing and now is no longer available to do. So, you know, we talk about in our paper the degree of structural change is very little in this approach because the leadership hierarchy is still in place, and the change in composition within the team is also very little because you have one of the more junior members of the team who is displaced and downsized.
Mm-hmm.
And so the structural change, the change in composition of the team are really two potential sources of disruption that could trigger team adaptation or trigger change. And in this approach, both of those are quite low.
Okay.
So according to our research, this approach, this maintaining hierarchy approach, is least likely to trigger adaptation in the team because of these different facets, and as a result, suffers from a significant decrease in team performance post-downsizing.
Okay.
So that's really the maintaining hierarchy approach that we outlined. The second approach we referred to as integrating hierarchy. In this approach, a lower-level team member is the one who is downsized, so just like the maintaining hierarchy example. But at the same time, the leadership hierarchy in the team is done away with, essentially. The team leader forgoes his or her formal leadership duties, responsibilities, and assumes the role or the responsibilities of the displaced team member. So this approach induces a limited change in the composition of the team. It's still only a junior member of the team who is displaced. But there's quite a bit of structural change that occurs within the team because that leadership hierarchy is eliminated in some sense. So as a result, we expected that structural approach to downsizing would promote moderate amounts of team adaptation because you have, even though you don't have a lot of compositional change, you do have quite a bit of structural change.
Right. The leader is moving down to the team.
Exactly. So we, as that played out in our study, contrary to some of our expectations, we found that structural approach to downsizing led to limited adaptation, and we proposed that maybe one reason that might be, despite the changes in formal structures and leadership hierarchy, that teams pretty early on in their life cycle develop pretty strong informal roles and informal norms and routines that carry forward. And we expect these informal norms and routines, given that the team leader was really still present in the team, limited actually at the end of the day how much adaptation occurred.
Right.
There simply wasn't enough of a trigger for change, if you will, in the team, given that these informal norms and roles still persisted. The third approach that we outlined, we called eliminating hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, the team leader was actually displaced from the team. The team leader was the one that was downsized. And the leadership hierarchy in the team was also eliminated. So if we go back to, you know, how much composition in the team changed, how much structural change occurred in the team, there was quite a bit on both accounts. The team
mm-hmm.
moved from a traditional hierarchical leadership structure to what we like to refer to as more of a self-managing team structure. And because a key team member was lost, in this case the team leader, who has certain roles and responsibilities that nobody else in the team can fulfill, there was perceived to be a much more significant change in team membership. Even though all the teams in our study were downsized by one team member, the case that this team leader was the one that was actually downsized was perceived to be a much more significant change. So now you get a sense that the team members saw a greater need for change. And One important point to make, we're not necessarily suggesting here that the team leader is the one that should always be downsized in organizational context. So it's very important that that point be made.
I don't imagine that would be the popular option.
That is not the popular option, no. It's not that we want to give a pink slip to all of our team leaders. The point was in our study that by eliminating the leadership hierarchy in the team and a central figure in the team, combining those two elements was a big enough trigger for change in the team for the team to really start to rethink the way it approaches the work. And by triggering that sense of a need for change, that was what promoted the adaptation. So because of this trigger for adaptation in our data, the eliminating hierarchy teams, the teams that actually displaced the team leader and made these structural changes, actually outperformed the other downsized teams. And actually, because of that adaptation, performed pretty much on par with the teams who didn't experience any downsizing at all, because of the degree to which they adapted to this disruptive event.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. Thanks. And you've also studied different factors that affect adaptation beyond the structural approaches, right?
Sure.
What are those types of factors?
It's an interesting question. In our particular study, we found that certain personality traits, namely extroversion and emotional stability, were particularly influential in promoting adaptation. Extroversion is simply the degree to which individuals and teams are, you know, gregarious and willing to speak up in times of change and bring issues to the surface and that sort of thing. Emotional stability is essentially the extent to which individuals and teams can maintain their cool and their emotions in times of change. Imagine these downsizing situations where they're pretty disruptive and can be very emotionally involved. And so the degree to which these individuals can maintain and kind of manage, I guess, their emotions in our particular study. And we found that both were particularly influential in facilitating this adaptation process. One reason for that was that greater extroversion led to more discussion and more coordination within the team. But that was only true for teams that noted a need for adaptation. Mm-hmm. So namely those teams who had dramatic changes in their team membership and leadership hierarchy and that eliminating hierarchy form of the team downsizing. Mm-hmm. And for the teams that didn't note the need to adapt, extroversion had very little impact on their performance. So the key there is that when teams can identify a need to change and there's a trigger in place for that change, extroversion really helps. Mm-hmm. And emotional stability in a similar way seemed important because downsizing, like I said, is a pretty disruptive event, can have serious emotional implications within small teams. And so it seemed to be an important component as well, and our findings support that as well.
And so practical applications for managers within organizations, what would you tell them?
Sure. I would say there are several important implications for managerial practice from this study. For one, how can managers make sure their teams adapt when disruptive events like downsizing take place? And it's a fundamental question that gets asked, or and if it doesn't, it should get asked quite often in organizations. And we offer one potential solution or model for how to think about that. And that's to be thoughtful about how you restructure your team post-downsizing. And do so in a way that ensures the team recognizes a need for change and a need for adaptation. Because not all structural changes, as our study would suggest, are created equal in how well they trigger that adaptation process. So implementing structural changes in terms of composition, the leadership hierarchy, that will facilitate the identification within the team that, hey, we need to change. We need to change how we are going about our jobs. We need to put forth more effort to get the job done, et cetera. So really being thoughtful about how you restructure your teams post-downsizing, I think, is a really key lesson from this study. The second point that I want managers to really think about and walk away with is in context where adaptation is the norm, rather than the exception. Our study suggests that organizations need to be very thoughtful about how they compose their teams. Extroversion and emotional stability were found to be pretty powerful individual differences and a pretty powerful combination for facilitating team adaptation. So organizations might want to think about how to compose their teams of members who are high in extroversion, emotional stability, such that when disruptive events like downsizing occur, their teams are better equipped and capable of adapting as you would want them to in the face of that disruptive event. And finally, I think it's important to realize that there's not just one way to adapt. I think most people naturally gravitate towards adapting by doing more of what they're used to. It's just it's less natural for us to meaningfully change our approach to situations, especially situations that we're fairly familiar with. And we get into these norms and routines that have worked in the past, and we think they will continue to work. And so we put forth more effort doing the same things we have done in the past, but that doesn't always play out and doesn't always work well. We often see challenges as an opportunity for us to overcome by putting forth more effort and that sort of thing. But there are cases where we might need to change the way we go about doing our work. And I think that's a key lesson from this study.
Thanks. So what is the bottom line for managers?
I would say organizations are rarely thoughtful about what should happen post-downsizing to make sure organizational units, such as teams, adapt in the right way to the disruption caused by the downsizing. I believe this is one of the key reasons why most organizations suffer from more serious problems post-downsizing. In this study, we make the obvious conclusion that organizations and the teams in those organizations need to be more thoughtful about how to manage the downsizing. That is clear. But we go beyond this to provide a framework for how to think about fostering and facilitating that change and that team adaptation. And the key is to present teams with enough of a trigger that the team thinks, okay, Houston, we have a problem here, and we need to change something about the way we are going about our work.
Well, we've been talking with Scott DeRue from the University of Michigan. Scott, thanks so much for being on the podcast. This has been very interesting.
Marilla, thank you so much, and it's really been my pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you for downloading Under New Management, a podcast of the Organizational Behavior Division of the Academy of Management. The OB division has over 5,000 members dedicated to the science and practice of organizational behavior. For more information about the OB division, visit www.obweb.org. For more information about the Academy of Management and its over 17,000 members worldwide, visit www.aomonline.org. Computer support for this podcast is provided by Vu Tran.